Good evening, church. There is an interactive outline for tonight that was on the back of this morning's interactive outline. So if you have yours from this morning, this will be a good time to get that. Mitchell has some extras. If you did not get this on your way in, if you'll raise your hand, we'll make sure you get one. I'd like for you to have that for the lesson of the hour. There's also an additional handout that I'd like for you all to have, especially those of you that are singles. If we're average, that will be about 48% of you tonight, right? This is entitled, Before You Marry, Questions to Ask Before You Seriously Consider Marrying Someone. And sometimes, because there's so much emotion involved, we kind of lose some objectivity. And these questions are specifically designed to help people discern whether this is a good choice or not. So I think this is a good thing for singles to have, and also for parents to have, as they use that to perhaps guide and encourage their kids as they go through this process of making this very important choice when it comes down to that. There's also a handout on the back called His Plan for Your Life, which I'll be mentioning tonight, that I also highly recommend. So let's continue our lesson from what we did this morning. It's a lesson for singles. If you're given the solo in life, what? Sing out. Make the absolute best of every stage of your life, including that time in your life when you happen to be single. We said that we're going to basically look at three key premises, which I introduced this morning, and then four key principles from 1 Corinthians 7 and 1 Corinthians chapter 9. So, especially since some of you were here tonight that were not here this morning, I'm just going to very briefly review these key first three premises. Premise number one is we need to learn to be content in whatever state we find ourselves. Paul, of course, was a confirmed bachelor, and no doubt a part of his learning to be content had to do with him dealing with some of the challenges of being a single, and he got to the point where he could be at peace and joyful without having a mate. And so it's important that those that are single learn to enjoy every single moment. Learn to be content. Premise number two, I think the basis for a lot of the discontentment that singles often have is not that they don't particularly have a partner, but that they feel pressure to fit in with everybody else. They feel like they're a third or fifth wheel, not because they have to be, but because we live in a culture and a society where things tend to often be set up to accommodate couples rather than singles. I talked to several people after church this morning about this very point, and there's nothing that is all that difficult about this. You just have to think about, when you're inviting people over, to include some singles along with it. Or in some occasions, my wife and I enjoy just having a bunch of singles over. But the point is, they need to feel loved and affirmed and accepted as they are. It's certainly a part of Romans 15 and verse 7. And premise number three is to remind ourselves that though certainly being husbands and wives and parents are very important, and the Bible talks a lot about that, and we talk a lot about those things, that the purpose of a man or a woman is not simply to be a part of a marital union, but it's primarily, and I would say the key element, is that we are made to glorify God. That's exactly what Isaiah 43 and verse 7 says. And so that means that if someone gets their identity from being a mom and then they have the empty nest, they need to remind themselves that all of this is about raising God's kids. It's all about doing God's will. It's all about preparing our characters and getting ourselves to a point where one day we can go to heaven. And that is what's important. And therefore, if a person winds up maybe hoping to be married, but it doesn't work out, it's not this terrible tragedy if they can find other avenues by which they can be fulfilled and glorify God in other ways. And so I think that's really important. And I think parents need to really focus in on that what matters in life is that you glorify God. That's the three premises. Then the first principle we introduced at the end of the lesson this morning is as follows. We must be reminded that it is not God's plan that everyone marry, or necessarily, if they are widowed or divorced, that they marry again. Well, Brother Hunter, where do you get that principle? Well, 1 Corinthians chapter 9, Paul says, "Have we not power to lead about a sister, a wife, as well as the other apostles, and as brethren of the Lord, Cephas?" And then he says in verse 12, "We had the right as apostles, I could have married. Nevertheless, we did not use this right, but we endure all things that we may cause no hindrance to the gospel." And so Paul is affirming marriage, but saying in his particular case, obviously with the travels and the hardships that he dealt with, it was not conducive to family life. And so he says that he chose not to do that because it would have gotten in the way of a higher purpose. And so it is God's plan that many marry, in fact, most marry, but it is not his plan that all marry. And if that were the case, that it was God's plan that everyone has to get married, then Paul would have been walking in disobedience because he deliberately chose not to marry. And most people understand that in Paul's case, that was something that we deeply respect and appreciate and simply just showed the measure of his commitment. Of course, Paul does say that he had what he refers to as a gift. And I think it's important to realize that Paul here views celibacy as a gift. Notice 1 Corinthians 7 and verse 7. He says, "I would that all men were even as myself," a reference to being single, "howbeit each man hath his gift from God, one after this manner and another after that." I think it's interesting that he uses this term gift in regards to living a life of celibacy. He obviously is talking about learning to be content with that and not be troubled by that. But I think it's not just his ability to live a life that way without that being disturbing to him personally. But perhaps it's broader than just the gift of celibacy. Perhaps it has to do with the fact that when he chose not to marry, that it was a gift in the sense that it gave him a lot of additional opportunities and it gave him a lot of freedoms that would not be the case if he had been married. Verse 8, he says, "But I say to the unmarried," I assume that is because they are either single or divorced. He says, "I say to those that are not married and to the widows, it is good for them to abide even as I." So he's giving this personal advice as an apostle, saying in this particular circumstance, I'm not encouraging you to marry unless you just really have to. And we'll talk what he means by that in just a minute. He says in verse 9, "If they do not, however, have self-control, let them marry, for it is better to marry than to burn." Lenski says this. I really like the way Lenski's commentary words this. He said, "To burn is in the present tense, as if to burn in oneself continually. It speaks of the strong fires of sexual desire, which deprived of marriage may result in criminal satisfaction and may in secret devastate the inner spiritual life." I think that's worded very well. So Paul states the facts sort of unblushingly that either you have this gift or you do not. And in this particular setting here in the church at Corinth, he says, if you have the gift, you strongly ought to consider, like me, remaining single. If you don't have the gift and it's going to devastate yourself spiritually, then in spite of the difficulties you're in with this present distress, as he refers to it, I would recommend that you get married anyway. All right, so Paul is viewing celibacy as a gift, and he demonstrates that that is a choice for some people, and it is not necessarily God's will that everybody gets married. Principle number two. Personal contentment is of greater value than marital companionship. In 1 Corinthians 7 and verse 25, he says, "Now concerning virgins," and then he says in verse 26, "Art thou bound to a wife?" He says, don't misunderstand me. If you're currently married, I want you to stay married. He says, seek not to be loosed. But then he says in verse 27, at this writing, are you currently loosed by perhaps being a widow or widower or perhaps through divorce? He says, in this case, my recommendation would be seek not a wife. Now, I don't want us to misquote Paul or for you to misquote me. He's not saying that we ought to set up some sort of monastery somewhere and promote the idea of monks and nuns as having some sort of higher spirituality because they have denied the flesh and gone off and live somewhere by themselves apart from a family unit. This text is sometimes used in that way, and that is certainly not what I'm trying to get out of this text at all. He's not saying that if you desire contentment, get away from a partner and find contentment alone in God. Instead, I think he's saying that if you were to weigh one against the other, personal contentment with God is of more value than marital companionship. And certainly, you shouldn't ever consider trading peace with God and having a right relationship with Him for a romantic relationship that is clearly not God's will. In my counseling, I've told singles that if you do not find contentment with yourself now, it is very doubtful you'll find contentment in life with a mate later. I think I mentioned this morning that the best way to approach this subject is to find contentment with God and with your life. Get your act together as a single, and then in that position, try to find somebody else who has their act together as a single, and then the two of you together might make a very good team as a couple. But if somebody is so emotionally needy that they feel desperate and they kind of become this clinging vine and they think they're miserably unhappy and the only way they can find fulfillment is by finding someone to marry them, that is not a formula typically for a successful relationship. Marriage is not some magic wand that as soon as I get married, suddenly I'm going to solve all my problems. Remember, you take yourself with you. So you want to find someone that will help you to be a better person, not act like everything, as far as my world is concerned, is banked upon finding all of my needs met in marriage. So he says, art thou loose from a wife? Seek not a wife. Now, why does he say that in this context? Because I believe he's talking about the present distress. Let's go ahead and read like verse 26. He says, I think it is good by reason of the present distress that is upon us, that it is good for a man to be as he is. This was a time where there was intense Jewish persecution, and many scholars believe the beginning of some Roman persecution, where sometimes simply because you were a Christian, there were some occasions where they literally would slaughter your family in front of you, and you would have to witness that in a terrible, horrific scene. And Paul may be referring to that kind of behavior where he says, I would have you spared that. And given that possibility in this present distress, if you can stay out of a marital state, I would recommend you do so. Leon Morris puts it this way, when high seas are raging, it's no time for changing ships. So if you're married, stay married. If you're not married at this point, he's advising, it's an apostle, that you consider staying single. The point, however, I want to make from this is that Paul would not have advised that these people remain single if being married was absolutely necessary for personal peace, contentment, and fulfillment. He's clearly indicating that there are times where you can find that apart from marriage. And I think we need to keep that in mind when we contemplate this subject. All right, principle number three. Marriage, while not sinful, obviously, in fact, it is the preferred state for most, it can be extremely difficult to maintain. Paul says in 1 Corinthians 7 and verse 28, He says, but if you should marry, thou hast not sinned. And if a virgin marry, she has not sinned. Yet such shall have trouble in this life, and that I would spare you. Some read this text and say, oh, Paul was some woman hater or a marriage hater. No, Paul is simply being compassionate, he says in verse 32, I would have you to be free from cares or concern. Some translations say, I would have you be free from anxiety. Literally, the Greek word here has to do with somebody who is divided, filled with anxiety because they're pulled in two different directions. Sort of like you're standing near a train, onto the door of the train as it pulls away, and the train is pulling you in one direction, and you don't have the feet on the train, and so if you feel like you're kind of being pulled apart. And he says that I'd rather you not have that tension, sort of being pulled apart, trying to satisfy your familiar needs and also satisfy the spiritual needs that you have, at least in this context. I would have you free from this inner division of heart, seems to be his idea. Marriage brings with it a lot of blessings. It's designed by God to be a blessing, but it also brings with us certain difficulties and responsibilities that lonely single people sometimes tend to forget. Paul, the little quip I've used earlier, and that is marriage is two becoming one, and the whole time you're trying to figure out which one. Anybody who's married can appreciate that kind of challenge. There are adjustments that start at the honeymoon that don't end to the grave. There are temperaments that you have to adjust to that sometimes are going kind of back and forth and are hard to read. There can be annoying habits that can get on a person's nerve. There are in-law and family disagreements. There are communication breakdowns and financial pressures. There's the arrival of children and brings a lot of joy, but can also bring a lot of sleepless nights and stresses as well. And so the point is, though most everybody that I know would say, well, I think the benefits are worth all of that, but single people sometimes think about the benefits they don't have, and they forget to think about the fact that there's some baggage that goes with marriage that they don't have to be concerned about either. And Paul is saying, so if you can avoid that in this circumstance, then avoid it. Ann Lander says, if it is any comfort to those of you that are single, most of my problem mail comes from unhappily married women. Theirs is the more difficult role. I have to chuckle at what Dr. Clyde Naramore said about this. He said, success in life consists not so much in marrying the one person that can make you happy as in escaping the many that you marry that can make you miserable. Honestly, I think that's exactly right. And, you know, marriage is a risk, and people ought to take very seriously making sure that they are marrying the right person. That's why I produced this handout for tonight that is entitled Questions to Ask Before You Marry. And, you know, I told my girls, I said, you know, you need to give me veto power here. You pick them out and then bring them and introduce them to mom and dad, and then we'll give you our feedback. And they said, okay, we want your feedback. I mean, they wanted to make sure that they were making a wise choice. And before they got too emotionally involved, I wanted them to allow us to, process this together with them. Because oftentimes you are so emotionally involved, what's the old saying, love is blind, you don't see things that you're dad and your mom might see. So every single person is wise to get feedback and to take this very seriously and to not be in a hurry. I tell people, you got the rest of your life to be married. This is not something that ought to be rushed. Sometimes single people tell me, well, I've got the worst possible lot in life. You can't imagine how lonely I am. Well, frankly, my experience has been, and other counselors and people that I know agree with this, that The worst thing in life is not to be single and lonely. The worst thing in life is to be cemented to someone that despises you. To be stuck in a marriage that you wish you weren't in and feel trapped. That's misery. And that's the thing that you need to be the most fearful of and that you need to make sure at all possible you avoid. Paul says you will have trouble in this life because in the best of marriages, there are rough spots. Marriage, you've got to cultivate a high level of interpersonal skill to maintain the kind of closeness and good relationships that's going to cause you to be in that top tier, which says, I find this relationship highly emotionally satisfactory. And that's the only kind of marriage relationship that gives God glory. And I think Paul is saying, you make sure you can pull that off. And make sure you recognize that this is work. Donald Trump, years ago, he had married Marla Maples, a beautiful model. And it wasn't too long after they got married that there was word of them having a divorce. And apparently Marla Maples said, no, let's not get a divorce. Let's go to counseling. Let's work on this. And the Donald, as he sometimes is called, called a press conference about this and other matters and said, I told Marla that I work long days at the office and I don't want to have to come home at night and work on my marriage as well. He didn't think you should have to work on your marriage. I have to work at business. That is so idiotic. Anything that is worthwhile takes effort, including a good marriage and family. And so people need to count the cost, and they need to have a balanced, reasonable attitude toward all of this and not ever be in some mad rush to the altar. That's principle number three. Principle number four. Being single, while not ideal, as I've already alluded to, can be spiritually profitable. Remember, he talks about the fact that people that are married have to focus in and be careful about the needs of their spouse and, if there's children, the children. He says in verse 32 of 1 Corinthians 7, I would have you without carefulness. In other words, I'd have you not have your interest divided. He that is unmarried cares for the things of the Lord and how he may please the Lord, at least if he or she is spiritually minded. Verse 33, but he that is married cares for the things that are of the world and how he might please his wife or husband, as the case may be. Verse 34, there is a difference also between a wife and a virgin. The unmarried woman cares for the things of the Lord, that she may be holy both in body and in spirit, but she that is married cares for the things of the world, how she may please her husband. Now notice verse 35. I've had this underlined in my Bible for years. I speak this for your own profit, that you may secure undistracted devotion to the Lord. Now the context here is one of the ways you can do that, particularly in this time of the present distress, is to focus in on serving the Lord, walking with God, being close to Him, and pursuing that with all gusto. And one of the things that single people have an opportunity to do that busy, working, married folks with a bunch of kids underfoot oftentimes do not have the opportunity to do is to truly have quality, quiet time with the Lord. I've had a lot of single people tell me that they have a lot of evenings, you know, 4 or 5 hours at night before they go to bed, and the whole evening's to themselves. They can do what they want, they can read what they want, they can engage in whatever activity they want. They are single and their time is their own when they're not working. On the other hand, a lot of people, particularly when children are at home, tell me they can't remember the last time they had 4 hours free to themselves. And one woman said, if they're not there, they are on my mind. See, that just sort of comes with family life. I'm not complaining. I mean, most of the time, that is the preferred mode that wants, and of course, is designed by God to be very fulfilling. But it also can really fill up your plate in a way that it can be a distraction from loving God first and serving Him first and serving other people and doing a lot of things that Paul here is saying single people are able to do in a way that is not a distraction. So I encourage single folks to say, you know, if you're married, instead of resisting, respect folks that are single. And if you're singles, instead of drifting and doubting and putting your life on hold while you're waiting to be married, this is your time where you can really go for it. This is the time when you can say, hey, I want to memorize these scriptures. I want to read these books. I want to spend this much time in the Word. I want to really cultivate my prayer life. I want to be a good soul winner. I want to convert my friends. You've got the time and the energy to do all of that and not just be fruitful, but be mega fruitful. There are very few singles that decide that that's what they're going to do with all their spare time and energy. In fact, they are conspicuous by their absence. I know of some who tell me they spend 4 to 5 hours a day doing video games. Is that giving glory to God? Is getting overly focused on recreation, is that what we ought to be doing with our time when we're single? Is that preparing us for heaven? Is that laying up treasures? Is that keeping our priorities where they ought to be? I think you know the answer to that. What we ought to do is be pointing our young people to meaningful things they can be doing to build their character and to help them prepare themselves to be the leaders of tomorrow. And yet, you're going to be out-talked and you're going to be out-shouted and outvoted by the media and by so many other people who act like this is just time to throw caution to the wind and do reckless things and, quote, have fun. Yeah, have fun when you're young. But serve the Creator in the days of your youth. And recognize while you're waiting for God, perhaps, to bring you this special person, that there is just so much that you can do in the kingdom. And you can have such a tremendous impact when you focus your life in that way. If you're married, distractions come with it because you need to be serious about those responsibilities. I'm not suggesting that you resent those or that you not take those seriously. But the Bible teaches that there's a little bit of a tug of war between someone who loves their family and loves their spouse, but also loves God and loves the church and loves his people. And sometimes you feel like you're trying to juggle all these different things, and it can cause concern. And so if you happen to be single and don't have those concerns, you've been called at this time in your life to sing a solo rather than to be a duet in this wonderful orchestra we call life. I just highly encourage you to remember, the sun will never shine as it does today. You must play your part and sing a song. Make it one of the best and make sure that you are confident that you are doing God's will. And if you have the solo in life, sing out. You will be amazed how God can make himself real to you. Okay. If this were a class, I'd love to take questions and have some feedback. Maybe we can talk some more after the lesson is over tonight. But that's what I wanted to talk about this evening, and I'm very glad that tonight at 6:30 over at the Millers, that young people from here and other area congregations are invited to get together and encourage one another and have some fun, but also of devotion and perhaps get to know one another in ways that will be iron sharpeneth iron and keep our young people focused on what really matters to the glory of God. So we're going to be doing that once a month now. The Millers have been kind enough to offer their home. I think that's a great idea, and I hope as we look to the future here at Kirkland, we can put more and more focus on what we can do to encourage our singles and our young people to be all that they can be, so that when they get to the point of being married and when they get to the point down the road that they can be deacons and elders, they'll be ready, in part because they made wise choices now. Wisdom is making choices now you'll be happy with later. And the ultimate answer to that is wise choices now, so one of these days when you stand before God, you'll do so with boldness and confidence because you made choices early on while you had the choice to serve Him and not be distracted and not get yourself involved in things that later on you'll regret. That's what we want for our young people, to serve their Creator in the days of their youth and in their middle age and in their old age, because that's what life's all about. Amen?
Amen.
All right, you listened well tonight. If there's someone who's subject to the gospel, once you come, together we stand and we sing.